Hello, everybody. This is Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 84, and I realized after finishing discussing the Libra decanates, there was still a little bit left in the Libra chapter. So let's take a look at that very short section. Page 251, the words or keynotes of this sign are so clear and plain that any elucidation of mine would serve but to confuse the issue. Well, then maybe I really shouldn't say anything. They speak straight to the heart and without obscurity. To the average man with no developed spiritual consciousness, the word goes forth again and again throughout the eons, and I suppose that's every time the man is born in Libra or under Libra with a strong Libra stellium, and the word said, let choice be made. And the choice, I suppose, even if it is an unconscious choice to the chooser, is between a material orientation and the possibility of some growing spiritual values. And in general, there are so many orientations in life which have to be chosen. These concern many mundane things, possibly. Always the Libra person operating under Saturn in a very strong way must make choices in everyday life. Regarding the direction of action, even if no immediate spiritual consequences are evident in these choices. The response eventually comes back as a result of the evolutionary process and from the soul. And this is the man increasingly identified as the soul and increasingly soul-infused. I choose the way which leads between the two great lines of force. Now, right there, we can choose the way of personal material action or of soul expression, the spiritual values chosen over the personal values, or in a way we can choose the way of the soul, which is the way which leads between spirit and matter, as the two of the greatest lines of force. So, I suppose many of us at the moment are simply attempting to choose a way which gives due consideration to material requirements and due consideration to a growing soul consciousness. But increasingly, as we build the Antikorana, as we receive energy from the triad, as we realize ourselves as spirit, as being, we are attempting to choose the way of the soul in all things when contrasted with the way of pure spirit and pure matter. From another point of view, we are choosing the Sushumna channel in the etheric spine, and interestingly, this may be considered the way of the spirit, which is central even to soul on one side, Pingala and Ida, personality or matter on the other side. In a way, being is that which is neither of the pairs of opposites. Pure being embraces both and is, in a way, that which lies between the pairs of opposites. So everything shares being. I guess how one applies this more spiritual side of the mantra, this more spiritual mantra, depends upon the point in evolution at which one finds oneself. I think most of us are not yet focused entirely within the soul. We have not yet achieved the third degree and have immediate causal consciousness at all times. So we are choosing a way which seeks to increase spiritual values, but gives due attention to the personal considerations, which are our responsibility, we move increasingly. The middle point rises increasingly. And the ways, the lines of force are either one of them, possibly, if chosen, destructive to the other opposite. So we often try to find the way of balance between them. There comes a point, I suppose, when we have to choose between the soul-infusing personality and the messages of the spiritual triad, the impulsions of the spiritual triad. There comes a still later point when the soul is the middle point, and the lines of force are monad and personality. Later still, perhaps the line of force, the middle line or the middle wave, will become the spiritual triad itself. The pairs of opposites then will be the soul-infused personality and the monad. Eventually the monad will become the middle point. The middle point is forever rising. And the reason to choose the way which leads between is to give proper respect to the integrity of the pairs of opposites with which we are confronted. They will always be changing, in a way, always rising, with the middle point rising as well. So our task at the moment is to find what for us are the two great lines of force temporarily, and how it is we navigate between them so that we ignore neither one of them. Ignoring one or the other is not productive. If we're confronted with two great lines of force and we simply choose one over the other, then we have failed to come to terms with aspects of our nature which are definitely present and which won't go away. It's obvious if we choose the strictly material way, we reject all the spiritual possibilities. If we choose the strictly spiritual way, we may veer off, so to speak, onto the mystic line and ignore entirely the idea that spirit must express through matter, that the spiritual energies have to infuse matter form. So I think these, the first one of these mantras is quite obvious. The second one has a variety of applications depending upon the point of evolution achieved by the individual. Okay, well, you know, I probably said more than I should. The Tibetan is just leaving this to our own consideration. But I have puzzled over the second mantra for many years in my life. Sometimes I've said, well, why not just choose soul? But if soul is still a higher force in my consciousness, and I'm not strictly and always polarized within the soul, then my effort to choose only soul may lead to the neglect of practical matters to which I karmically and dharmically must attend. So, you know, the Christ gave quite a Libran statement at a certain point. He said, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's, and unto the Lord or the Christ that which is his. Something to that effect, meaning we have to be observant in both directions. Well, now we come to a rather lengthy chapter. It's 34 pages long. I don't know how many programs it will take here. But let us begin. It's such an important sign, such a powerful sign, being so active, as we are told, in the second part of the previous solar system and working as that which substands our development in this primarily second-ray solar system. Now, you know, Virgo means many things to many planets and to many systems, but we're talking about largely what it means now and to our second-ray solar system. We really don't know the energies which are received from it in other solar systems, in other ones of the seven solar systems, of which ours is one. Okay. So what does DK say? The sign is one of the most significant in the zodiac, for its symbology concerns the whole goal of the evolutionary process, which is to shield, nurture, shield, nurture, and finally reveal the hidden spiritual reality. I am the mother and the child, I, God, I, matter, am Christ in you, the hope, at first, the hope of glory, eventual glory, the glory of the full expression of light, love, and power through matter is, of some kind, is coming. So the guarding, protecting, nurturing, and revealing aspects of Virgo appear at different times in the process, in the evolutionary process. Let's just consider it man's evolutionary process at first. This every form veils the hidden spiritual reality. In a way, the hidden spiritual reality is the monad, is the central fire, is the aspect of pure being within us and within every form. Not all forms have the capacity to reveal this inner spiritual reality to the same extent. I mean, think about the primitive egoic lotus closed down upon the jewel in the lotus or central fire. This is very different from the full-blown flower, the full-blown flower at the time of the fourth initiation, with the jewel in the lotus blazing away and the radiation of all parts of the egoic lotus extending far beyond the periphery. The hidden spiritual reality, the jewel in the lotus, is representing that central aspect, is then as fully revealed as it can be in that particular form. Very incompletely revealed in previous stages of unfoldment of that same form. So this inner spiritual reality, hidden spiritual reality, every form veils, but the human form is equipped and fitted to manifest it in a different manner to any other expression of divinity. Interesting idea. The human form is equipped and fitted to manifest the hidden spiritual reality in a manner different to any other expression of divinity. I suppose we're speaking of our planet particularly, and to make tangible and objective that for which the whole creative process was intended. So quite a responsibility on humanity. And we have to understand what he means. I suppose it's because we are bringing together lowest matter and highest spirit. We are the point where they tend to meet. So although the reality may blaze forth on the higher planes, it's not blazing forth through the lower type of matter which we have inherited, and it's not reaching to the very depths. We have, I think, as human beings, the opportunity to bring the expression of the hidden spiritual reality down into forms of matter which usually veil it and are opaque. But we can, in a way, regenerate through the powers of the soul and spirit all the lesser forms and make them shine with a light which probably can only be engendered in this second solar system. It was not engendered in a previous solar system. So we're raising this lower form of matter to the next level and making it far more expressive of the second ray themes, the glorious themes, the glory of the second ray than they otherwise could be. If we were to look at the names of the second ray Lord. I think one of them is the displayer of glory. I think so. So here, you know, if we go to page, let's say, go to page 60, something like that. Let's see if we can find. Yes, here it is, the displayer of glory. The radiance in the form. So we can see how the earlier types of matter are under Vulcan, in a way, as an interesting representative of the second ray in its higher aspects, will bring forth this great radiance, this display of glory. Okay. So, Gemini and Virgo are closely related. They are related through ray, yes, second ray, that they both transmit constellationally, and they are both Mercurian signs. They're closely related, but Gemini presents the pairs of opposites, in this case soul and body, as two separate entities. Whereas in Virgo they are blended. I guess they're blended also in Libra to a certain extent, otherwise there cannot be a marriage between the two. Whereas in Virgo they are blended and of great and supreme importance to each other, where maybe in Gemini their contact is more occasional. So the blending power of Virgo, remember there's an M in the Virgo glyph, and it is in a way suggesting the three aspects of divinity, soul and personality matter, but also spirit as well. And they are all connected, whereas in Gemini they seem to be separated in the glyph of Gemini, the two pillars. Although in a way they are connected above and below in relation to spirit and to matter. Also, Gemini seems to give us the way of connecting the very highest with the very lowest, and hence seems to carry some foundational stability of the seventh ray, even if not in this solar system. It is possible to ascend and descend from heaven to earth as the two lines, parallel lines in Gemini, do have this vertical dimension. So the connectedness of Virgo tells us about the blending of these opposites, and even of spirit, and of their great and supreme importance to each other, and some of the description of the light in Virgo. The description in the Cancer chapters of the opposites give us some of this idea. The mother protects the germ of the Christ life. This tiny germ of consciousness, which is eventually to be fulfilled under Jupiter as the hierarchical ruler. The laws of matter, you might say, the processes of matter guard. Matter guards, cherishes, and nurtures the hidden soul. So there are laws in the world of matter which guard and protect the integrity of the growing Christ consciousness. The keynote, which embodies the truth as to the mission of Virgo, most accurately. There are two, interesting that there are two keynotes for Virgo, one of them rather complex. I am the mother and the child, I God, I matter am, it's triple. But the one, he says, that embodies the truth as to the mission, the eventual destination of the process, is Christ in you, the hope of glory. And I suppose every awakening Virgo feels himself or herself pregnant with this growing consciousness, which is so different from consciousness in matter. There is no clearer or more adequate definition of this sign than that. I would have you bear it in mind throughout our discussion upon this sixth sign of the zodiac, or the seventh if one is not considering the reverse wheel. Yes. That is, if one is considering the clockwise wheel. Interesting about the seven, because there is so much inherent seventh ray in it. And the six and the seven, the desire, six, or incarnation, seven. Interesting that they occupy the six and the seven together. And I'm thinking about the plane on which Virgo is found in the table of creative hierarchies. We can look at this. And I think we see that it is at once a six and a seven. Here is where we see that. It is six numbering from below and seven numbering from above. So not only does this work out in relation to the liberated and still manifesting hierarchies, but it works out in terms of the wheel, rotating, turning in two directions, with Virgo being the sixth sign in the normal counterclockwise order and the seventh in the clockwise order. Seven is the foundation. When we did some research with the personal identity profile, we found that those individuals who had been estimated in having a strong seventh ray, either by themselves or by someone who knew them well, when there was Virgo, this seventh ray was showing up. In other words, Virgo correlated very positively with the presence of the seventh ray. But that's probably a supportive factor coming from a previous solar system, as now the emphasis of Virgo is less material and more subjective. Matter may reign at first, but it's really about the Christ. It's about the subjective or life aspect, the rays 2 and 6 being prominent now, whereas we can infer that rays 3 and 7 were foundational and prominent earlier. So there is no clearer or more adequate definition of this sign than that. I would have you bear it in mind throughout our discussion upon this sixth sign of the zodiac, or the seventh if one is not considering the reverse wheel. Something within each one of us which is dimly flickering and which emerges in strength under certain circumstances and forms of stimulation. It can be beauty or music or art or relationship, or something brings it forward. We realize that indeed the Christ is within us, the Christ consciousness, unitive consciousness of love wisdom, which is normally fairly veiled by the opacity of our vehicles, but which can emerge and will emerge in fullness as these vehicles are refined and as the Christ consciousness is strengthened through acts of service, through meditation, through study. We will ourselves flower into the fullness of the Christ, each one of us a Christ at some point. It's just that he chose such a direct path, using very much the energy of love wisdom as his method, the fastest method, and at once, one might say, in this solar system, the most painful and challenging method, requiring, I would say, the greatest amount of courage. And this is why the masters regard him with such reverence, why they bend the knee to the Christ, the Lord Maitreya, and his achievements, unique achievements. with respect to humanity. He is so much more than the conventional religions conceive him to be. They tell certain dogmatic fairy tales, fabricated, I think, by the mind of man, the mind of St. Paul, and the mind of others who have followed. But what we know of this great being is so much greater than those fabrications. In all the great world religions, the Virgin Mother, and this, a study of any book, in all the great world religions, the Virgin Mother appears, and this a study of any book upon comparative religion will prove. We have to maintain our philosophical perspective, otherwise we commit the sin of restrictive literalism. It is such a problem that symbolic expressions are interpreted materially and literally in a most confined manner, which is almost childish. And even relatively intelligent people deal with the, or are captivated by what they might call the literal inerrancy of the Bible or some other scriptural book. They are still the victims of concrete mind and cannot expand the concretion into the symbol it represents and touch that which the symbol can indicate, but which is itself intangible. The war of some faiths against idolatry is a war that is forced on others by concrete-minded individuals who cannot see in the tangible representation of deity the symbol. No one is so foolish as to worship the idol itself. Those who persecute others for idolatry are closer to idolatry themselves than the ones they persecute, because they're concrete mind will not allow them to touch the abstraction which the concretion represents. But of course, it's going to take a lot of time before people grow, some people grow into a larger state of consciousness where they will realize their own error. Okay, I cannot trace for you at length this universal recognition of the task of Virgo. I suppose, you know, in the secret doctrine, there's quite a bit of the various representations, the correlative representations in the world religions and philosophies. It is needless for me to do so, as it has been adequately done by many research scholars. I would, however, point out that four of the names whereby the Virgin is called, so obviously there must be many more, are familiar to us and tell us much as a whole concerning the form nature of which the Virgin is the symbol. Well, the Virgin is the symbol of matter, root pristine matter, mula prakriti, and also of the form building which has resulted from the use of this matter. It is important for us to distinguish between matter and form, as matter is correlated with the third aspect of divinity and form with the second. The word Virgo itself is a descendant of and a corruption of an ancient Atlantean root name. This is most interesting, and you kind of wonder about the libraries where DK was able to encounter this information. It came from, but has been corrupted, so it's not easily traced. It came from an ancient Atlantean root name, which was applied to the mother principle in those far-off times. The mother principle, that which produces form out of itself. this mother principle, this virgin, was the founder of the matriarchate. This virgin, or this mother principle, or the energy of Virgo, I don't think we're talking about a literal human being. This virgin was the founder of the matriarchate, which then dominated civilization, and to which various myths and legends bear evidence, and which have come down to us concerning Lilith, the last of the virgin goddesses of Atlantean time. So a matriarchate prevailed in Atlantis. It's been probably balanced by an Aryan patriarchate, patriarchy. And now as we move towards the sixth subrace, the six being a number of harmony, Kabbalistically, as Libra becomes more powerful in our planetary horoscope, we don't know for how long, as Budi, the plane of harmony, is invoked by the sixth root race, we seek to harmonize the concepts of matriarchate and patriarchate, patriarchy. Lilith has often an evil reputation, but the goddess of one civilization may turn out to be the demon of another. So the rule of the mother principle was powerful in Atlantis, and according to some of the things that DK says, even more powerful in the previous solar system, when the figures of the goddess were dominant. We have to always be careful not to overreact against the present abuses. The pendulum can swing too far in the other direction. I suppose there came a time when the male principle and those who represented it became fed up with the matriarchate, and they went far in the opposite direction, probably too far, as we see in many abuses. And now we find those who seek to bring the feminine principle into back into its proper place, some of them reacting overmuch to the abuses of the patriarchy. But the truth is in a Libran marriage or union of the two. And we have to have that good sense of proportion to know when we are preserving the best values of each. Sometimes when we look at the Sphinx, we might think of a union between the matriarchy and the patriarchy, the sun being in some ways a dominant male symbol, ruler of Leo, and the moon esoterically ruling Virgo, having so much to do with the personality and with the feminine principle and with matter. Perhaps the Sphinx, the union of the Sphinx, tells us something about the blending of the matriarchy and the patriarchy. Okay, the same thought is also to be found in the traditionary, interesting words, not traditional, but traditionary accounts of the ancient Amazons. A blend somehow of the feminine principle and of Mars. They have many masculine characteristics. It's almost like astrologically they are represented by Mars in Virgo. So a dominating matriarchy, and the traditionary accounts of the ancient Amazons whose queen Hercules defeated, wresting from her that which he sought. Now in the Labors of Hercules we learn that he did not need to kill the Amazon queen. He did not need to wrest from her the girdle of Venus. Interesting that Venus falls in that sign. He's looking for the soul, which is deeply buried in matter. He wants to dominate matter so that the soul will be unobscured. And yet, according to the evolutionary process, the energies of matter will gradually, gladly give themselves to the new dispensation. we'll be attracted to it. We'll seek to blend and merge with it. So it was probably a more intelligent way that he might have proceeded and that many disciples now following in his footsteps might proceed. The idea of negating the value, the entire value of matter, subduing, suppressing, even crushing matter is unnecessary because then the instrument that one might use in one's redemptive work in the lower worlds is destroyed. And we must use the instrument to reach our field of service. So this is an allegory teaching the emergence of spiritual man. Kind of interesting, though. You know, Hercules was a great teacher, we're told, and a dramatist, and he was Atlantean, and in Atlantean times he created these illuminative dramas for the lifting of the consciousness of those who lived at that time and probably who could understand things better dramatically and pictorially than in a purely mental or abstract manner. So the second, fourth, and sixth ray were involved in his dramas. The creative imagination was very powerful. So this is an allegory, a story representing a process teaching the emergence of spiritual man from the control of matter. Now, does this have to be done violently? Killing out the value of that which matter might otherwise gladly offer up to the higher principle? Or can this be done more intelligently? I think in an age of Aquarius, where matter is to be respected and the spiritualization of matter is a major theme, and practical mysticism and a spirituality respecting matter will develop, we'll have different ways of helping the spiritual man emerge from the control of matter. We may even control matter scientifically in such a way that it will facilitate the emergence of the soul in incarnation from the control of matter. Three of these goddesses, I guess maybe Lilith was the other one here, three of these goddesses are Eve, Isis, and Mary. What does it say somewhere that Lilith was... Was she Adam's first wife or something like that? There's some interesting statements which seem to complicate the simplicity of the biblical account, as if Adam was the first and only man. I mean, there's an example of a symbol being interpreted with restrictive literalism, so that the deeper principle is not revealed. So three of these goddesses are Eve, Isis, and Mary. They are of peculiar and significant importance where our civilization is concerned, for they embody in themselves the symbology of the entire form nature. That's an important statement. They embody in themselves the symbology of the entire form nature, which, when integrated and functioning as a whole person, we call the personality. So the integrated personality in a way, Eve, Isis, and Mary. The integrated personality is symbolized by the union of Eve, Isis, and Mary. We have personality. We can certainly detect personality. The question is this personality really integrated? And there are many lives which may go into this process, and then lives in which we express that integrated personality in a somewhat dominant manner. What did he say? 3, 7, or 11 lives, something like that? So what we really need is the great perspective over our many lives. We need to remember at a time when our remembrance can be profitable and not disabling, where we have been and what we have done, and we need to be able to study it with scientific objectivity and not get pulled into the victories and defeats of these previous lives, not to react to them emotionally, but to learn the lessons involved and to be able to teach those lessons to the up-and-coming, who are, of course, ignorant in their own way of these lessons. So Evice is Mary. The personality is, as far as humanity is concerned, the developed and qualified expression of the third aspect of divinity, is the third aspect rising microcosmically to its highest expression. That of God, the Holy Spirit. The active intelligent, there's the ray of active intelligence, the active intelligent and nurturing principle of the universe. Of course, there is nurture as well that seems to come from the second ray when it is turned towards the province of the third ray in goodwill. Love in action. Love, second aspect, action, third aspect. It seems that we need the two of them to bring forth the nurturance. But let's just say that this means the sustainment of forms. Nurturance as the sustainment of forms. And we nurture the body through our food and through sunlight and water and other factors which are found within the world of matter-form. And the body is thereby sustained. The forms within that world are sustained from the world of form. But of course, the archetype, in a way, energetically supports the form and keeps it in right proportion, even though the foodstuffs will come from the third aspect of divinity. I suppose there are ways in the future whereby we can nurture the form and sustain its integrity with increasingly higher energies. And some people are attempting that even now. This aspect we shall study in Leo. Okay. And see that there, that the unfoldment of that self-conscious entity and person and personality, which in Virgo becomes the mother of the Christ child. This aspect we shall study in Leo and see there the unfoldment of that self-conscious entity, the individualized consciousness, which comes to birth long ago under the influence of Leo. See there the unfoldment of that self-conscious entity and personality, which in Virgo becomes the mother of the Christ child. So interestingly, Leo is connected with all forms of identity, and it is connected with the integrated personality, with the growth of the self-conscious entity until it realizes itself to be the incipient Christ. That which we are as an inner consciousness is actually the Christ aspect, the consciousness aspect. But we don't realize its sacredness, its divinity, until a certain point in evolution. So we are coming next to the Leo chapter. And we will see the unfoldment of the self-conscious entity to the group conscious entity to the entity conscious of the one, whatever that one might be. There are many ones. And the personality consciousness is definitely there. So Virgo is, in a way, deeply related to the personality as it shields, nurtures, and reveals, eventually, what the self-conscious entity within is becoming. So the sun eventually is glorified through the substance of Virgo. The sun ruling Leo is glorified. The sun aspect, in a way, the second aspect, is glorified through the substance of Virgo. It's kind of a connection between the Sun and the Moon, or between the Sun and Vulcan, in a way, with Vulcan playing its role in the glorification of matter. Eve is the symbol of the mental nature and of the mind of man attracted by the lure of knowledge to be gained through the experience of incarnation. It was Eve who was interested in the apples of knowledge, which appears to have been forbidden fruit. But what was forbidding? Were the ancestral gods the ones forbidding? Because the serpent, in a way a symbol of the solar angel, would encourage Eve to pluck the apples of knowledge, a higher reflection of which is the golden apples of the Hesperides, which Hercules is seeking in Gemini. So the mind is lured by knowledge to be gained through the experience of incarnation, and there is a type of knowledge in the second law of repulse. He gains knowledge of the world of natural things, but his eyes are opened and his eye is shut. So Eve therefore took the apple of knowledge from the serpent of matter, in a way learning knowledge of the material world, but, you know, what prompts Eve to do this? The serpent is also a symbol of wisdom, and the solar angel would always encourage the growth of knowledge in the world. This growth of knowledge, interestingly, associated with Taurus in some respects and Gemini with others. And so Eve is the mind learning the nature of matter. Okay, and that started the long human undertaking of experiment, experience, and expression. Once we experiment and have the experience, a certain amount of knowledge comes to us, and we then learn to express it, which was initiated from the mental angle in our Aryan times. It's almost as if Eve comes later. We're talking really about events that occurred in the time of individualization. So there was a kind of Eve demonstration at that time as the mind of man slowly awakens in his instinctual living and emotional living. Instinct and emotion seem to come first, and the mind then learns about them, but that was well before our Aryan times. So more conscious experiment, experience, and expression are undertaken in our Aryan times about 1 million years ago, and some say coming to slow birth during a few million years, even before the official beginning of the Aryan age of the fifth root race. So Eve does have an Aryan connection, but also a Lemurian connection, as man, through individualization, was driven from the garden, from the Garden of Eden, which was that primitive participation, mystique, where he does not know himself as distinct, as a distinct unit. He's part of everything and does not, has more of the animal consciousness. So there is, in a way, through the acquisition of self-knowledge, the ending of animal consciousness, and that self-knowledge came about, however dimly at first, with individualization. And it is individualization which expelled the man from the Garden of Eden. And of course there are people who, you know, want to make all this as literal as possible, a literal garden with a literal location and a literal human beings, Adam and Eve and so forth. But there's a great security in literality, literalness, if we will. So a lot of frightened consciousnesses cling to the literal because it's tangible enough to hold on to. It's not vague and vaporous and apparently insubstantial, leaving you lost. The more mature consciousness and intellect is not lost with abstractions. Finds itself even more oriented through the significant abstractions, less cluttered than if surrounded by concretions. It's finding that pivot point, that abstraction can be the pivot point, which lies behind many derivative concretions. Isis, another name in a way for the star Sirius, connected with Venus too, stands for this same expression down on the emotional or astral plane. So let's see what kind of expression that is. It's the mind of man attracted by the lure of knowledge, and I suppose the emotions of the human being attracted by that which emotional life can offer, the astral plane can offer. Now, if are we beginning with Aryan work and not associating Isis with Atlantis? See, there's a way in which we can associate Isis with Atlantean development, but there's also another way in which if we begin with Eve and work our way down from the mind to the emotions, we're still in the Aryan period. And eventually with Mary, still in the Aryan period, bringing the Christ consciousness to birth in the Aryan period. Of course, it's clear that the Christ consciousness has existed all throughout our planetary development. The Christ himself, the one we call the Christ, was taking the third initiation, certainly filled with Christ consciousness, in Atlantean times. It's a planetary and solar systemic and even cosmic principle, so the Christ consciousness will always be with us, but we're talking about its birth relative to the human race and its spread among quite a number of the members of the human race rather than just the possession of a few initiates. So this same type of expression will be brought onto the emotional or astral plane. Eve has no child in her arms. So the Christ is not really yet nurtured. The conception may be there, using conception in two ways. But I guess sexuality entered at that time, according to legend, between Adam and Eve, and this is another reason for their being cast from the garden. But we're talking about Virgo and the growth of the Christ consciousness, so we have individualization with Eve and the going forth after knowledge. And then with Isis, we have the germ of the Christ life emerging more. With Eve, the germ of the Christ life is as yet too small to make its presence felt. And if you think back, how would the newly individualized man back in Lemurian times realize that this consciousness, which had been implanted by the solar angel, nurtured by the solar angel, this implantation of the spark of mind, how would they know that it would grow into Christ consciousness? Because that spark of mind which implanted was not only a question of light, love and will were also implanted. The Tibetan tells us at a certain time. So this implantation by the solar angels contains not only the possibility of a growing self-conscious intelligence, but the possibility of a growing sense of being a being of love, and a growing sense of being a being of will. The involutionary process is yet too close. Matter is still too strong. But in Isis, the midway point is reached. You kind of wonder whether we can, well, think about astrologically as Eve, the conception chart, Isis, the animation chart, and Mary, the birth chart, whether they would be ruled respectively by Uranus, Neptune, and Saturn. See, so we're looking at this in two ways. We're looking at these three figures, starting from an Aryan point and still moving through the Aryan race, and also perhaps starting from a Lemurian point, moving into an Atlantean and thence into an Aryan point, with Mary representing the Aryan factor, Isis, the Atlantean, and Eve, back at the beginning of the individualization of man, the Lemurian factor. But in Isis, the midway point is reached, the quickening of that which is desired, called the desire of all nations, that is called in the Bible. And interestingly enough, this second chart, you know, this is work pioneered by Charles Jane, the so-called ABC charts, the animation chart, the birth chart, and the conception chart. Not in that order, but he used ABC, you know, simply because it's a good way to remember it. But first comes the conception chart, then the animation chart, then the birth chart, CAB it would be. So he calls that second chart the animation chart, which is ruled by Neptune. He calls it the quickening chart, interestingly enough. Okay. Ruled by Neptune. So the quickening chart, or the quickening of that which is desired, the desire of all nations, has taken place, and Isis consequently stands in the ancient zodiacs for fertility. The germ is growing. Let's see if I can find this. Isis stands in the ancient zodiacs for fertility. Okay. We are very close to the 1 hour point. I always like to mark the 1 hour, as these programs tend to be produced in quite long form and then are divided into 1 hour forms. Isis consequently stands in the ancient zodiacs for fertility, for motherhood, and as the guardian of the child. I suppose we can say that, you know, the Christ consciousness certainly was quite veiled in Lemuria, when in a sense Eve reigned. One could sense it emerging in the astral-emotional soft-line period of Atlantis. And then the Aryan race again becomes physical rather than emotional, and Mary carries the process down onto the plane of incarnation. Interestingly enough, little recent research brought it home to me that she is said to be born in Virgo. September 8th is the day it's celebrated. Her birth is celebrated. So she's identified with that aspect as an individual and not only as a principle, interestingly enough. Mary carries the process down onto the plane of incarnation in the Aryan age. Not only is the Lemurian race physical, with a slight awakening of the mind, the Aryan race is definitely mental, but with a strong physical component. So the soul nature on the higher mental plane has to be born within the physical plane, and one needs the cultivation of the mind in order to do that. This needs then to happen in the Aryan age. So Mary carries the process down onto the plane of, or place of incarnation, the physical plane, and there gives birth to the Christ. It's like the Aryan race giving birth to the Christ, doing something that could not yet be done in Atlantis. The Aryan race gives birth to the Christ consciousness. Continuity of consciousness, we don't want that. Okay, in these three virgins and these three mothers of the Christ at different stages of the Christ's growth and development, you have the history of the formation and function of the three aspects of the personality through which the Christ must find expression. Now, in a way, in Lemuria, we begin physically, move in Atlantis to the emotional, and come to the mental stage in the Aryan race, and yet we have to re-descend from the conception through the magical growth of that conception in the magical process, adding incentive to the thought form until it finally precipitates as a magical construction, and this is the Christ precipitating. So in a way we have this. We have, from the standpoint of the races, we have Eve, Isis, Mary. But from the standpoint of expression, magical expression, beginning in the Aryan race, we have, again, a repetition of this, Eve, Isis, and Mary. With Mary bringing the long-desired inner Christ through into full expression. So Eve, Isis, and Mary occurs within the Aryan race, and Eve, Isis, and Mary occurs across the three races, Lemurian, Atlantean, and Aryan. I guess we can say that our Aryan race is indeed the time of manifestation, and especially of the possibility of manifesting the second aspect of divinity. The two and five are involved there, coming down through the seven. The two and five on the plane of soul, the second aspect of divinity on the fifth plane of mind, with the strong desire nature, a Neptunian nature in a way, under the sixth ray, further desiring and promoting the growth of the desire for the manifestation, and finally manifestation occurring in Virgo with Mary, and with a strong associated seventh ray to bring it right onto the physical plane. Okay, now I guess I went over just a little bit. Sorry, I can't quite keep this in the order it should be. But I'll say here that this is the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 84A, and we're moving on. We're on page 253, and beginning of EAA 84B, 253, almost 254.